Blog Talk Radio.
This is Scott Middleton, host of I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. When I want to listen to a podcast, I listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. He talks about sports and entertainment. So go do what I do. Listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. You can find it here on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. Welcome to I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, Scott Middleton, and for the next 30 minutes, this episode is about remembering the AWA back in the 80s, part one. And for the next 30 minutes, we'll be taking callers. Hopefully, they'll call in, and we'll be discussing the 80s and 80s of the AWA, and hopefully we'll have a good show today for you and all that. I see we already got a caller. The caller is from area code 309. Give us your name and where you're from and your memories of the AWA.
Hey, this John. Is Nick from Kewaunee, Illinois, and I obviously didn't grow up with the AWA like, you know, most wrestling fans. I'm a 90s kid. But as far as I'm concerned, the AWA in the 80s, it kind of reminds me of ECW in a way, where it was basically the third promotion during the big wrestling boom. It was an acquired taste. Fans either really liked the AWA or they really didn't like it at that point. And they were a company that was always trying to play catch-up, especially after Hogan left. I mean, you had them attempt to do some of the stuff that Vince and the NWA was doing, but it just never panned out because they didn't have the talent. And even when they did have the talent, Vern didn't like them, and so they never went anywhere.
Yeah, that was what you hear a lot about people say about Vern, is that he only had certain people he liked, and if he didn't like you, then even if you had the major talent, weren't going to go anywhere. So, and you're right about that. That I believe the AWA was always trying to catch up with NWA and WWF or whatever it was called back then. And it had all right people, but like you said, after Hogan left, it just kind of started going downhill. And who would you say, in your opinion, Nick, was the best AWA world champion?
In the 80s?
I'd have to pick
Larry Zbyszko. Just because he was so underrated as a talker and as a performer. He never, ever truly got the credit he deserved for being great. I mean, despite what people say about him, he drew wherever he wrestled, even in the NWA when he was feuding with Barry Windham. Those matches drew money. He drew a little bit during the AWA. In fact, he was probably the only reason why they still had fans at that point, because they just wanted to see him get his butt kicked. Obviously he drew for Vince Sr. as well. But as far as I'm concerned, in the 80s, he was the best of the AWA world champions. You had names like Bockwinkel. But Bockwinkel was at the end of his career, and he wasn't as good as he had been previously. He also didn't have the people to feud with either. I mean, he had a very young Kurt Hennig who was good in the ring, but he really hadn't found his niche as a character yet. He wouldn't do that until he became Mr. Perfect. And then you had Stan Hansen, who, I mean, the only place he was big was really in Japan. And he absolutely stunk in the AWA, in my opinion. I mean, I guess you could say Lawler, but Lawler didn't last long, with good reason, because Vern was cheating him out of money and everything. So, yeah. I mean, really, Rick Martel, I love Rick Martel. He's one of my all-time favorites, but he should have never been world champion. He was never a guy that was going to be able to carry a world title. So, to me, that was a huge mistake.
Yeah. I think like for me, you know, I was a big Nick Bockwinkel fan, but I agree with you that Nick Bockwinkel was towards the end of his career when he had the title. But, you know, like he, you know, besides Larry Zbyszko being there, I agree with you. He should have put the title on Larry Zbyszko sooner than what he did. But, I mean, like, between them two, between Bockwinkel and Zbyszko, I didn't see really anyone else besides Curt Hennig. But like you said, Curt Hennig wasn't there just yet.
Yeah,
so
he wasn't as polished as he became later on.
Yeah.
I mean, you could that he had the talent, that he was going to be great someday. He just wasn't there yet.
Yeah, and, you know, and then you had other people come in, like Jerry Lawler, which he should have been world champion way before he was, but just,
oh, absolutely. I believe he should have been NWA world champion at one point, but the NWA, they always kind of thumbed their nose at the Memphis territory, even though they drew as big a numbers as any other territory in the entire organization.
Yeah. And, like, giving a little history, actually, if people don't remember this or don't know this, actually, the AWA, the territory part, was originally part of the NWA until...
Oh, yeah, they were trendsetters. They were the very first ones to break off from the NWA. You know, if it weren't for Vern Gagne breaking away, I don't think Vince McMahon Sr. would have had the balls to break away when he did.
Exactly. And, you know, and I just, you know, and with the AWA, you know, and a lot of people, you know, people like you and me that love the 80s wrestling and other people that love the 80s wrestling, but for the newer people that don't really realize, you know, the AWA was pretty much just a Midwest territory, and they had, like, they had Nevada and California and Colorado. But
and parts of Canada.
Yeah, and parts of Canada. Thank you, Nick, for that. Forgot about that one. But, you know, and they did something that a lot of territories couldn't do. They could go to Memphis, and then around the same card, some of the NWA people would come to Memphis and wrestle in that territory, and I think St. Louis was the only two territories that actually used both, you know, talents, but... Getting back to the AWA, I just, you know, some of the greatest feuds that I remember is, like, Nick Bockwinkel versus Rick Martel. Well, maybe it wasn't a real great one, but it was a decent one. And then maybe Sergeant Slaughter and Zbyszko. What's your opinion, Nick?
Well, for me, the best feud in the AWA in the 80s, without a doubt, it's the Midnight Rockers and Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. I mean, that feud, that was on par with the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express. Those were teams that they carried the territory for a brief time, because at that time, no one really cared about the world championship, because that world title was stagnant. But you had these two teams, especially Sean and Marty, who were lighting the wrestling world on fire. I mean, yeah, they were kind of a ripoff of the Rock and Roll Express, but they were a damn good ripoff. And look at the careers they built for themselves, obviously, with Shawn Michaels being a Hall of Famer. But it was that feud that really put it over the top for Shawn and Marty as well, especially the one match that aired on ESPN that ended up in a bloodbath. I mean, that's a match that fans still talk about to this day.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was definitely a tremendous bloody match and all that. And now, for anyone else that wants to call in to get into this conversation and tell us their memories, the number you can call is 646-668-8873, or you could email us at ilove80swrestling@gmail.com and give us your opinions. You can join the discussion between me and Nick and give your opinion. But I want to get back to the earlier 80s, you know, like you had, I know you probably, you know, since you're younger than I am and, you know, some of the other people that listen to this, but they had a team that everyone says is the best team in the decades and all that, which I kind of disagree with, and that's the Road Warriors. What was your opinion of the Road Warriors in the AWA, if you've seen any of their matches from the AWA?
I've seen plenty of their stuff. As far as drawing power goes, I will say they were the greatest team of the 80s, but obviously in terms of in-ring skill, they weren't even close. You know, there was plenty of other teams that had more in-ring skill. But the thing about the Road Warriors was, and this worked in every territory, they just had this presence about them that immediately drew the fans to them, whether they were working as a babyface or as heels. The fans just always loved them. They were like the Sid Vicious of the 80s, where you just had to like them because of their maniacal style, their look. It didn't matter. They drew everywhere, including the AWA. They helped pop the territory after Hogan left. You know, if it hadn't been for them, I don't think they probably would have made it past 1985.
Nope, I doubt it too. And the one feud that they had, a big feud in the AWA, was the Road Warriors and the Fabulous Ones. It wasn't up to the par like the Midnight Rockers versus Buddy Rose and Dead Summers, but it was still pretty good. And I kind of thought how they became AWA World Tag Team Champion was kind of marred because of who they beat. They beat Baron Von Rusty and the Crusher.
Yeah, they beat two guys that, at that point in time, neither one had any business being in the ring anymore. They were so far past their prime, especially the Crusher. I mean, I like the Crusher at all. I've seen a lot of his footage from the 60s and 70s, and he was a superstar there. But by the time the 80s came around, I mean, he moved even slower than he did in his prime, and he couldn't do much. And Baron Von Raschke, by the time the 80s come, you'd pretty much seen everything he had to offer, too. And to me, those two just didn't have any chemistry as a team. You know, when you had Crusher and Dick the Bruiser, that was a team that had chemistry. To me, it just looked like they just threw the Crusher and Raschke together just to say they had a couple big stars, you know, that held the titles. Yeah. Kind of like what WWE had been doing for the last several years with their tag belts.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just, you know, like I said, the Road Warriors, they're all right, I should say. To me, they weren't the best team, but like you said, they had the drawing power. They could bring the money. And another feud that the Road Warriors had was, which kind of shocked me that it actually worked as well as it did, and that was against the Freebirds in the AWA. Even though it was a very short feud, but it just, I mean, it was two completely different styles, and they mixed together pretty well and all that. So what did you think of that?
That feud had so much potential, and Vern just completely pissed it all away. It was ridiculous. I mean, those two could have feuded for a couple of years if Vernon had his head remotely on straight as a promoter. It was sad.
Oh, yeah. And the one person that I, you know, we're trying to talk about all the AWA, but the one person I kind of feel really bad about, and that is Greg Gagne. I mean, I agree,
because the stigma, I mean, he falls into the same stigma as guys like Jeff Jarrett, where no matter how great a performer Greg was, everyone always talked, well, he was only in the spot because his father was the promoter, which is probably true. You know, and Jim Ross said it best. I think Greg Gagne should have left the AWA at one point and gone to work somewhere else, and he could have made a much bigger name for himself outside. I mean, if he'd have went and worked, say, worked for Vince or even down in Crockett's territory, I think he'd have been a great success there because he was a great performer.
Yeah.
He was never going to be a world champion. He was always, a tag team guy, but he was really great at it. Him and Brunzell are one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. I mean, they pioneered high-flying tag team wrestling. If it weren't for guys like them, you wouldn't have had the Rockers or the Rock and Roll Express or the Hardy Boys or, you know, the teams like that would come after them. They were such pioneers.
Exactly. And, you know, like Jim Brunzell, apparently when the High Flyers lost their tag team titles and all that, apparently he saw the writing on the wall that it was time to get going because, like you said, after Hogan left, then Bobby Heenan and then Mean Gene Okerlund and Adrian Adonis and all of them just took off and went to Vince.
And Tito Santana left with them too, I believe.
Yeah, Tito. I forgot about him. But it's like they all left and then Vern Gagne was here with you know, it's like, what can I do with these? But I think the problem with Vern was that he couldn't get past, it's like, hey, I got to change. I got to change. Look what Vince is doing. Look what Jim Crockett's doing. Even look what Fritz von Erich is doing down in Texas. It's like, look what they're all doing, but hey, I'm going to hold to my standards. And that's what really hurt him real bad, because he wouldn't change. And even if people have watched the AWA DVD, I think Greg kind of hinted towards it. He didn't come out right and say it, but he kind of hinted towards that his dad would not change. And he even told his dad that you need to change, but he wouldn't. So that's what ultimately
destroyed. Oh, yeah, and he wasn't the only one on that DVD. Michael Hayes brought up, said that's one of the main reasons why they left, was because they saw the writing on the wall that Vern was just, he was set in his ways, and the territory wasn't going to pop. As big as it needed to be. So they figured, you know, go back to Texas. You know, draw some more money with the Von Erichs.
Oh, yeah. And again, if you want to call in and be part of this conversation and give us your opinion, the number is 646-668-8873, or email us at ilove80s@gmail.com, and we can discuss. But, you know, another thing that I kind of found funny, and the AWA had a title that it was a very, I think only two people ever held that title, and that was the AWA America's title. And
Sergeant Slaughter held it, and I think didn't Zbyszko hold it as well?
Zbyszko held it first for, I think, like a couple months, and then Slaughter came in, beat him. Slaughter held the title, maybe defended that title, I think maybe three times, and then the title disappeared. Which I don't know what Vern or whoever's idea that was. It was pretty much a useless title to me.
Yeah, and Sergeant Slaughter, that's another big mistake that Vern made. Slaughter should have been world champion in AWA. I mean, he was absolutely hot. He was the hottest babyface that Vince had prior to Hogan. And he had the G.I. Joe thing going, which, you know, G.I. Joe in the 80s, I mean, and 90s. I mean, I can't name a single kid I knew that didn't love G.I. Joe. And he was, you know, one of only three real-life people to be a part of that line. He was even in the original movie. They should have made him world champion. They could have made a lot of money with him as world champion with that gimmick.
But he wasn't in bed with
Vern like Bockwinkel was, so it never happened. Yeah. You know, that was Vern's problem. The whole hierarchy in the AWA was basically like a good old boys network. If you were friends with Vern and really close with him, he might throw you a bone, but if you were a guy, say, like Sergeant Slaughter or, you know, Jimmy Snuka or, you know, people like that, you're just there, you'd collect a paycheck, and you wouldn't get to do much.
Exactly. And getting back to chanting that, it was, to me and my friends have talked about this, which was a big mistake given the title, was Stan Hansen, because it's like, Stan Hansen, there was no way Vern Gagne to compete money-wise to Japan for Stan Hansen. And I think Greg told his dad, it's like, don't give him the title because, you know, of whatever. And I've heard backstories. I don't know if you heard or if anyone, some of the backstories about why Hansen did what he did and all that, was that Vern originally wanted him to lose the title to Nick Bockwinkel at, I believe it was in Denver or some little area where they only had like maybe 200-300 people. And then the next night they were going to go somewhere and they had already sold like about 800-900 tickets. And Stan Hansen told them, it's like, well, why don't we wait till then for me to drop it? But, you know, Vern being Vern, saying, no, you're going to drop it and all that. And that's when he walked out. So, I mean,
I've heard that story. Bockwinkel has told that story, that is what happened, that Hansen had no problem dropping the title to him, but he wanted to drop it to him in front of a bigger crowd. And Vern was just set on him doing it in front of that small-ass crowd, and that's why Hansen walked out.
Yeah.
But to me, the bigger question is, why would Stan Hansen go to the AWA? I mean, he was a megastar in Japan. He didn't need any American promotion. He could write his own ticket. I just don't get it. I mean, if he wanted to go to a American promotion, why not go to Vince? Go to Crockett. You know, he'd have made a ton of money in either promotion or even WCCW. Exactly. I just never understood why he chose the AWA.
Neither did I. But, like, since we some good stuff's come out of the AWA, you know, like, they had Super Clash, which was, you know, it wasn't as big as Starrcade and all that, but, you know, it was a big card for them, and, you know, it drew decent money for them, and they had decent matches. What did you think of the Super Clash, the first one?
I think all three Super Clashes were huge mistakes. To me, the only thing that those shows ever accomplished was it showed the weakness of the AWA talent-wise compared to the companies they were working with. I mean, if you think about it, I guarantee you the only reason why those Super Clash shows did well is because the fans came there to watch, say, Ric Flair defend the NWA title. They didn't come there to see the AWA matches, aside from maybe Road Warriors and the Freebirds.
Yeah. And, you know, like, before they started going downhill, like in the 80s, early 80s, they were, you know, which Byrne, from what I've heard, is that originally it's like Byrne wanted athletes. He didn't want the show, you know, the big show guys and all that. He wanted athletes. But it worked, but then it didn't work because he wouldn't change and all that. And do you agree with that statement, or?
Oh, absolutely. By the time those late 70s and early 80s came around, there was a demand for a different kind of athlete that people wanted to see in wrestling. And ironically, the person that enacted that change started off in the AWA, Superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes. To me, those were the two people that ushered in that change. And Vern thought, well, you know, no, they don't really want to see that. They just want to see the same, you know, boring action from guys like Brad Rangins that they've been seeing for the past 20 years or so. And he refused to change. And even when the tidal wave, the start of Hulkamania started with Vern still kind of fought it in a way. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Vern just couldn't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, he had people working for him that saw it. Nick Bockwinkel saw it. His son even noticed that there was a changing of the guard. But Vern just didn't want to change. I think if Vern had changed in the early 80s, I think the AWA would still be in business today. Of course, Greg would be running it now, but I think they'd still be in business.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like, besides, you know, back in the 80s, you had some bigger guys like Jerry Blackwell. He was a big guy, and he personally, to me, he should have at least had a run with the AWA title, even though if it was a short run, at least had a little run, because once they turned them face, he was a big face for them. What did you think?
Oh, yeah,
Jerry
Blackwell drew for the AWA. He was one of the best big guys of that era. I mean, he was so popular, and he was good. He can move in that ring, which at the time, guesses, this is before your Vaders and your Bam Bam Bigelows and your Yokozunas, so it was rare for a guy that big to be able to move like him. He was a special attraction, and that's another talent that Vern misused. And it just ended up being a habit of his, was he had these great talents, but he didn't know how to use them correct, or he knew how to use them correct, but he just didn't want to.
Yeah. And, well, one thing we got to give Vern some credit for, he did produce some great athletes from his training, like Ric Flair.
I think that's the AWA's greatest legacy, is the people that passed through that company that Vern trained. I mean, obviously, the most famous one would be Ric Flair, for obvious reasons. I mean, he's the greatest of all time, as far as I'm concerned. But you had the Iron Sheik, Jim Brunzel, Ricky Steamboat, Slaughter, Vader, the Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on. Ken Patera. All those great talents that drew money in this business all came from him. Him and Stu Hart, to me, would be the two most prolific trainers in the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah. And I just, you know, personally, I think the AWA, you know, if you lived in the Midwest, you had either the AWA or you had Central States that was down in Missouri, and a little bit of St. Louis club, but, you know, like the AWA was the one that had the bigger territory around. And unfortunately, Vern Gagne just didn't get with it, and he was stuck in the old ways, which, you know, on his part, I can understand, because, you know, that's how the older promoters were. They just didn't want to change. And unfortunately, that was the downfall for him and all the other promoters like Fritz Von Erich and like that. So, but, you know, the AWA is going to be part of wrestling history.
Absolutely. His impact on the business is something that it'll take 100 years before no one will notice it anymore. Just the amount of people that he brought into the business. I mean, the AWA at that time, especially in the late 80s, they had opportunities. They could have done something. There was a dream tag team match. This is when Central States actually became an affiliate of the AWA. They had a dream tag team match that only happened one time, and there's video of it. I used to have a copy of it. But it was the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, and Dynamite Kid against the Rock and Roll Express.
I remember that.
And
nice.
It was a wrestling classic. And they should have let that match be a regular AWA match instead of something in the Central States territory. They should have brought both those teams up. That could have popped the territory. But for whatever reason, that never happened. They were stuck. They wrestled one match in the Central States affiliate, and that was it. I mean, it was pathetic.
Now, in your opinion, who was the best AWA world champion, would you say, from the 80s?
Oh, just in the 80s?
Well,
I believe I already stated my pick was Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah, Larry Zbyszko. How about the tag team, the world tag team champions?
I got three teams that come to mind. Summers and Rose, the Midnight Rockers, and Bad Company. Tanaka and Diamond.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I forgot about those guys. But, yeah, they were, all three were
it's
great.
Amazing when you go back and think about the AWA, especially in the late 80s, all the eventual megastars that passed through that territory and worked for them. I mean, Mick Foley worked there when he was part of WCCW, I believe. Scott Steiner was on a couple of those episodes working with Memphis. Dallas Page.
And then here's another one. He had already been a big megastar and all that. And that was Tommy Rich. He came there. I think he worked for them for like a month or two or something like that.
So did Bob Orton Jr. In 1990, it was right as he was retiring, Harley Race worked there and had a little feud going with Zbyszko over the world title.
That would have been a great match to see.
With Harley in his prime. But I've seen some of those matches with Zbyszko. And, I mean, Harley, I don't know what he was still doing wrestling at that time because he couldn't move. I mean, he was so beaten up and old. It wasn't the Harley Race.
Yeah, and the AWA to me will always go down as a territory that could have been and
should have been.
Yeah, it should have been too, and it just unfortunately it wasn't. But we're running out of time. We're gonna be having a part two on Wednesday at 5:30, and I hope you can join us again, Nick. For that.
No problem. See you there on Wednesday.
Okay, and we'll be. I meant Tuesday. It's Tuesday at 5:30. And
Tuesday.
Sorry about that. We'll join me and Nick on the next podcast. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
This is Scott Middleton, host of I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. When I want to listen to a podcast, I listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. He talks about sports and entertainment. So go do what I do. Listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. You can find it here on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes.